Okay, so get this. We're wading right into the middle of a, well, you could call it a controversy. It's got Austria's intellectuals and, frankly, anyone who cares about religion over there pretty fired up.
Yeah, and it all starts with what you might think is a pretty harmless opinion piece. Church attendance is down, they say, and people are going at it, like really going at it, about what it all means.
So right off the bat, let's paint a picture for our listeners. We're talking Austria, right? And over there, they've got this whole church tax system.
Right, most people are actually financially supporting a religion just by being citizens through this tax. They can opt out, of course, but it's kind of baked into their system.
Okay, so that's important. This isn't just some theoretical debate about faith. It's connected to actual money, people's paychecks.
Exactly. It adds this whole other layer of, I don't know, intensity maybe. Like suddenly it's not just about spiritual beliefs, but about where your euros are going.
Fascinating. So how does this financial stake, if you will, how does it play into the whole controversy we're diving into?
It's like adding fuel to a fire that's, already smoldering. This tax system. It means every Austrian has skin in the game, financially speaking, when it comes to whether the church thrives or, well, doesn't. It takes what could be a theological discussion and slams it right into the real world with real-world consequences.
I'm starting to see why this blew up the way it did. So let's talk about the spark, the catalyst, if you will. We've got this guest commentary in Die Presse, which, and correct me if I'm wrong, is a pretty prominent newspaper over there.
Oh, yeah. Die Presse is like one of the big ones for sure. And the author of this piece that's stirring everything up, Professor Rudolf K. Hofer. Now, here's where it gets interesting. He's not just some armchair commentator, he's a retired theology professor.
Okay, so he's coming at this with some serious academic weight behind him.
Oh.
A theology professor, huh?
And not just any theology, he's a Catholic theologian. It's important to keep that in mind because it shapes how he's looking at this issue, this very real issue he's raising. The Catholic Church is seeing people leave in record numbers.
That's a trend we've seen in a lot of places, not just Austria. So he's raising the alarm, wants to talk about why it's happening. Seems reasonable enough, right?
On the surface, yeah, totally. But then Hufford does this interesting thing. He basically puts almost all the blame for this decline on one thing, the church tax.
Interesting. So is he saying people are leaving because they can't afford it, or?
That's the question, isn't it? Is it really about the money, or is the church tax a convenient scapegoat? It makes you wonder if there are other, maybe more uncomfortable truths about why people are leaving that Huffer might be sidestepping.
This is where it gets really interesting, right? Because Hubbard doesn't just identify a problem, he offers a solution. And buckle up because it's a doozy.
Oh, yeah, here comes the curveball. So, if the problem is people leaving because of the church tax, what's the logical solution? According to Hofer, have the government, the Austrian government, directly fund the churches to make up for the lost revenue.
Whoa, okay. So instead of people paying the church tax, the government just foots the bill directly.
You got it. And that, my friend, is where Clemens Lynchinger enters the scene.
And Lynchinger, for those who haven't had the pleasure, is
Oh, he's a big deal in this whole thing. Lynchinger is a legal expert, calls himself a humanist, and let me tell you, the man does not hold back. He goes after Hoffer's argument with a vengeance.
So this isn't just an academic disagreement. It gets personal.
It gets fiery. Lynchinger calls Hoffer's argument, and I'm quoting here, unacademic, and get this, dangerous to secular society.
Dangerous to secular society. Strong words. What's he getting at there?
It boils down to this. Lynchinger sees Hofer's proposal as a direct attack on the separation of church and state. And in a modern democracy, that separation is, kind of a big deal.
Right, like one of the foundational principles. So for Lynchinger, it's about way more than just money.
Exactly. It's like he's saying, hold on, you want to take my tax dollars, even though I opted out of paying church tax, and use them to support an institution I don't even believe in? Not on my watch.
This is getting good. So we've got this fundamental clash. Hofer says people are leaving primarily for financial reasons. Lynchinger says, not so fast. There's more to it than that.
Exactly. And this is where it gets even juicier. Lynchinger goes on to say that Hofer's assumption, the idea that people are just leaving because of money, it's just flat out wrong.
Okay, so then what's Lynchinger's take on why people are leaving the church in droves?
Well, he brings up a whole bunch of factors. You've got the scandals that have rocked the church, right? Then there's the church's stance on certain social issues, which not everyone agrees with. And then there's the fact that, well, people are finding spiritual fulfillment in places outside of organized religion these days.
He's painting a much more nuanced picture, isn't he? It's not just about holding on to your euros. There are all these other factors at play.
Exactly. It's way more complex than Hofer makes it seem. And get this, Linchinger doesn't stop there. He goes even further, questioning the whole idea of theology as an objective discipline. He even goes so far as to call it, and I'm quoting again, sophisticated lobbying disguised as scholarship.
Wow. Okay, he's really going for it, huh? Calling out the whole field of theology. Sophisticated lobbying. That's a bold statement.
Right. It's like he's saying, don't be fooled. This isn't just about neutral scholarship. There's an agenda here.
Yeah.
It really makes you think about power dynamics, about who gets to decide what counts as knowledge.
That's a huge question. And it seems like Linchinger is tying it directly back to this whole debate about the role of the church in society.
You got it. And this is where it goes from being an Austrian issue to something much bigger. Linchinger is tapping into this massive ongoing debate about how much influence religious institutions should have in a secular society.
A debate that's happening all over the world, by the way.
Absolutely. And Linchinger uses a really fascinating, if somewhat unsettling, example from Austria's own history to illustrate his point. He brings up the concordat that Austria signed with the Vatican back in 1934.
A concordat? Now remind me, what's a concordat again?
Basically, it's an agreement, a treaty between the Catholic Church and a state. And this particular concordat, well, it gave the church significant influence in Austria.
And just for context, 1934, Austria wasn't exactly known for its strong separation of church and state at that point, right?
Not exactly a shining example, no. And Linchinger uses this historical example to show what he sees as the dangers of giving religious institutions too much power. It's like he's saying, look, we've been down this road before and it didn't end well. We need to be really careful about going down that path again.
So he's saying this whole debate isn't just theoretical. It has real historical weight behind it. Powerful stuff. But before we get too far down that road, I think we need to take a step back and acknowledge something really important. We're here to present both sides of this debate, right? We've talked a lot about Linchinger's critique of Hofer, which is fascinating, don't get me wrong. But we also need to remember that Hofer is raising a valid concern. People are leaving the church, and he's trying to figure out why and what, if anything, can be done about it.
Absolutely. It's easy to get caught up in the back and forth. But we're not here to take sides. Our job is to present both Hofer's perspective, his concerns about declining church attendance, and his proposed solutions, alongside Linchinger's very strong rebuttal.
We're giving you, the listener, all the pieces of the puzzle. Do you think the state should step in and financially support religious institutions that are struggling? Or does that cross a line, blurring the separation of church and state, and potentially opening the door for undue influence? It's a complicated issue with no easy answers, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And you know what? This whole debate in Austria, it actually gives us a really interesting lens through which to view some even bigger questions that are playing out all over the world. We're talking about the relationship between religion and the state in the 21st century. We're talking about the role of individual belief in a world that's constantly changing.
Big questions. And as we dig deeper into this controversy, we're going to uncover a detail that adds a whole other layer of intrigue to this already fascinating story.
Yeah.
A detail that makes you question everything you thought you knew, but we'll save that little bombshell for next time. I mean, talk about a plot twist, right?
Oh, true.
Just when you think you're starting to grasp the whole picture, this financial detail pops up and throws everything into question. It really makes you think twice about what's really going on here, doesn't it?
It sure does. It's like, are we really just talking about a decline in faith and shrinking congregations? Or is there something bigger, something about power dynamics and institutional influence lurking beneath the surface?
It's like we're seeing this massive shift, this kind of earthquake happening under our feet. And it's not just affecting religion, right? It's like all these traditional institutions, from government to education, even family structures, they're all grappling with this question of relevance in a world that's becoming more and more secular.
You're hitting on something really important here. It's like the old rule book, the one that told us how these big systems were supposed to work. It's not as reliable as it used to be. And in the middle of all this change, we have Linchinger, who doesn't just criticize, he actually throws out an alternative, a different way of looking at things.
Right. So instead of just railing against Hofer's proposal, he offers a different path forward. It's like he's saying, look, if churches want to survive, if they actually want people to show up and be a part of what they're doing, they need to adapt.
Exactly. He's advocating for this more organic approach. He's saying that real engagement, the kind that keeps people coming back, it doesn't come from dependence on the state or from handouts. It comes from genuine self-reflection, from a willingness to evolve.
It's like he's challenging the church to do some serious soul searching, right? To take a good hard look at themselves and say, okay, what do we need to do differently to connect with people today?
Exactly. But it raises this really interesting question. Can an institution that's been around for centuries, that's built on tradition, can it really embrace this kind of radical change? Or is it, I don't know, is it too stuck in its ways?
That's a question that goes way beyond the church, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have we seen this play out? This tension between preserving the old ways and embracing the new in all sorts of different arenas.
All the time. It's like this fundamental human struggle. And while Lynchinger's idea, this call for adaptation, it might seem idealistic, it points to something really crucial. If you want to survive, especially in a world that's changing as fast as ours, you have to be willing to adapt.
It's that whole adapt or die thing, right?
Yeah.
But I'm curious, what does adaptation even look like for an institution like the Catholic Church? That seems like a whole other can of worms.
Oh, for sure. But even if we don't have all the answers, this debate gives us this, I don't know, this sort of microcosm of these massive forces that are shaping the world. It forces us to really look at how religion, the state, and individual belief, how they all interact in the 21st century.
And these aren't just Austrian issues, are they? This whole thing is like holding a mirror up to what's happening globally.
100%. From arguments about religious freedom to the role faith should play in public life, these are questions that people are grappling with all over the world and often with much higher stakes, frankly.
It's a good reminder that even though this debate might seem localized, happening in some newspaper in Austria, it's actually tapping into something much bigger, something universal. We're talking about the need for change, the struggle to adapt, and ultimately the very human search for meaning in a world that often feels like it's spinning out of control.
And as we continue to peel back the layers of this debate, it's important to remember that there's not going to be one right answer. It's complicated, there are nuances, there are multiple perspectives. What's crucial is that we approach these complexities with a critical eye, but also with an open mind.
I like that. Critical but open. It's like we need to be willing to ask the tough questions, but also be ready to be surprised by the answers.
And speaking of tough questions, we've talked about the financial side, the historical context, but there's another piece of this puzzle that we haven't touched on yet.
And what's that?
The individual. The person who's caught in the middle of all this, wrestling with their own faith, maybe feeling alienated from an institution that doesn't feel relevant anymore. What does this whole debate tell us about the individual search for meaning in the 21st century? That's such a good point. And honestly, it's one that often gets lost in the shuffle. When we talk about these big institutions and systems, it's easy to forget that at the heart of it all are individual human beings trying to make sense of the world. Maybe this debate isn't so much about saving a church as it is about understanding what people need, what they're looking for spiritually in a world that's saturated with information and choices.
It's like we've gone from a world of limited options to this overwhelming buffet of spiritual and philosophical ideas. It's almost like an information overload, but in a spiritual sense.
Right. And it's in this environment, this marketplace of ideas, that traditional institutions are being forced to prove their worth. They have to figure out how to stay relevant, how to inspire loyalty and devotion when their dogma might clash with what people believe today. Especially when information is so readily available. It's not like it used to be, where the church had a monopoly on that sort of thing.
It's like they're being challenged to step up their game, right? To say, hey, we're still relevant. We still have something valuable to offer. But doing that requires a willingness to change, to maybe even give up some control, which is never easy. But that's what makes this whole debate so fascinating.
It's true. It forces us to confront some uncomfortable truths about ourselves, about the institutions we build, and about the world we live in. It forces us to question what we think we know and to admit that maybe, just maybe, what worked in the past isn't going to cut it anymore.
It's about recognizing that change, even when it's messy and uncomfortable, is a part of life, isn't it?
Yeah.
And maybe, just maybe, it's in those messy, uncomfortable moments that we discover something new, something even better.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll save that conversation for next time. It's like this whole thing, this whole debate, it's like a, I don't know, a microcosm of something much bigger. It's like we're all collectively trying to figure out what it means to be human, what it means to have faith in a world that just keeps changing faster and faster.
I couldn't have said it better myself. We're basically trying to navigate by these old maps, these old ways of thinking, and they're just not as reliable as they used to be. Whether we're talking about big institutions or belief systems or even just our own personal convictions, the 21st century is like, hey, time to reconsider what really matters, people.
I like that. Reconsider what really matters.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting? We've talked about the financial puzzle, the historical baggage, the changing landscape of belief. But there's this one thread that runs through it all that I find really compelling.
Oh, and what's that?
Individual choice. In a world that's increasingly dominated by these massive systems, these institutions that feel so much bigger than any one person, it's easy to feel kind of powerless, right? Like our choices don't really matter. But this whole debate, it kind of hinges on that, on the power of individual decisions.
Yeah.
To stay or to leave, to conform or to find a new way.
That's a really powerful point. Mm-hmm. Every time someone opts out of that church tax, every time someone questions a doctrine, every time someone finds their own path outside of these established structures, they're casting a vote. They're saying, this is the kind of world I want to live in.
It's like these little acts of rebellion, these quiet choices, they have this cumulative effect. And eventually, if enough people make those choices, something's got to give.
Right. It's like the subtle shift in the balance of power. It might not happen overnight, but these institutions, they start to take notice. They have to.
It makes you wonder, what happens when enough people say enough is enough? Do these old structures crumble? Do they find a way to adapt? Or do we end up building something totally new?
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it? And I don't pretend to have the answer, but that's the beauty of it all, I think. Mm. By engaging with these questions, we're really digging into the messiness of it all. We equip ourselves to navigate whatever comes next.
We become better explorers, more equipped to chart a course through the unknown.
Exactly. The destination might be a mystery, but that doesn't mean we can't enjoy the journey, right? And who knows? Maybe it's in those moments of uncertainty, those moments when we're forced to question everything, that we make the most incredible discoveries.
I love that. Embracing the unknown. So as we wrap up our deep dive today,
yeah,
I think the biggest takeaway isn't a neat and tidy answer, but rather a renewed sense of curiosity, a sense of possibility, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It's about recognizing that change is inevitable. It can be messy. It can be uncomfortable. But it's also the driving force behind growth, behind evolution. And who knows what amazing things might emerge from all this change. It's kind of exciting when you think about it that way.
It really is. It's like we're all part of this grand experiment, figuring it out as we go. And on that note, we'll leave you with this final thought. What seemingly small choice, what question, what action can you take today that might lead to a more meaningful, more fulfilling tomorrow? The answer, my friend, is up to you. This has been The Deep Dive. Until next time, keep exploring.